Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720
WGN. You think it's going to be blues here, right? It's blues. Oh, wait, what's happening now? Is it blues? Is it funk? What's happening? Hasn't even kicked in yet. Yeah, Steve Cochran Show, welcome. Why don't we dance?
Have no place to go. Darling, have no place to go.
Well, I'm up, you're up. Why don't we do a show? Show number 847. My friend Dave Ennett's back. And if you spot the purple in the 9 o'clock hour, because we're continuing to pump up the jams. We said that once in the 80s or 90s. I don't remember which.
I remember that vaguely.
When you spot the purple in the 9 o'clock hour, tell me where the purple is. You got to watch the live stream, the video stream at WGNradio.com, where it says watch this at any time, or in the 9 o'clock hour, watch CLTV. And we like that partnership with CLTV, don't we?
Yes, we do.
It's an opportunity for people to see just how big my melon is, but you can't do it until 9. So you'll have an opportunity to spot the purple and hear the cat roar. And when a cat roars, be the seventh caller. Not you, Dave. You don't have to roar. But hear the cat roar and be the seventh caller, and you'll win a bunch of prizes.
I could roar.
We may have to roll with that, right? Have the cat roar. Have Dave Ennett the cat roar. We don't need to do it today. We're going to continue it. But I mean, he may need to.
I think we should try it right now.
No.
He may need a couple days to rehearse his roar.
Yeah.
Wow, Dave, that was very impressive. I must be honest. Chuck Todd later this hour. Jeremy Roenick's got something to talk about, which is pretty cool. And we got our politics situation in the 7 o'clock hour with Mr. Brady, Mr. Edelstein, and a special report that has limited things to do with politics. But when Chuck Gowdy has an interesting coming on, you just go, you don't have anything on me, do you, Chuck? And when he says no, then you go ahead and you put him on.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
The top six at six on 720 WGN.
612, here we go. Item number one. And again, these are in no particular order. Six things I know you're going to be talking about or hearing about throughout the day. The Trump administration on the verge of pulling transgender bathroom protection. This is after Sean Spicer yesterday said it's just not a priority for us. This is going to be a Title IX court fight. And the folks that fought through this in North Carolina will continue to have it. I would just say for all of us who at different times went, well, how many transgender people are there? Can't grown-ups settle this locally? Can't they just do this? Well, there were a lot of people at one point that said, you know, it's just one black kid. It's just one Jewish kid. Can't they figure it out? So everybody deserves protection under the law. I don't know how you figure this out. I don't know how you make it right. I do know that there's no grand a chunk of evidence that says pedophiles are wandering into girls' bathrooms pretending they're transgender.
No.
It's not happening. So if we can dispel with the fear and try to figure out a way to do it, which again seems to me in an era where schools don't have money, a unisex bathroom in the schools, that would seem to be a solution. But again, it needs to be solved. It's a problem that needs to be solved.
They have them in every Starbucks. Why not in every school?
Yeah, but you don't want to send a kid out to go to Starbucks. You'll never see him again.
This is true.
Next! I'd like to be in Mexico today with Rex Tillerson and Homeland Security Secretary Kelly. Hola. Sit down. They may need some stinking badges today. They walk into a hornet's nest because it's not just a question of the wall and the fact that Mexico says, no, we're not paying for your stupid wall. It's also a question of what this new immigration policy rollout will be. Now, yesterday, you know that little weasel, Stephen Miller? I mean, wow. The kid's only 31 years old. You got to give him credit for how fast he's risen in the political world. But this is a guy a couple of Sundays ago who kind of made a jackass of himself on the Sunday morning shows when he said, nobody questions the powers of the presidency.
Yeah, and he said, I wasn't briefed on that. I can't answer those questions.
Yeah, he did literally say that as well. He said, do you know the answer to that one?
No.
Because you asked me, do you know the answer?
Yeah, I'm not prepped on those questions.
But Stephen Miller yesterday was asked about whether or not this new immigration plan is different than the old one? You know, nah, not really. Just made a couple adjustments here and there. That's not really what you want to hand to the opposition in a continued court fight on this, which you know there will be. Mm-hmm. So last night, the people in the State Department, the people in the Trump's departments, decided we're going to wait about a week on this before we put this out. We know we said it would be today, but it's going to be about another week because we want to get it right. Mm-hmm. You know, and they should. They should wait a week on it for two reasons. One, to get it right, and two, to make Stephen Miller disappear. Somewhere in the witness protection program, a different identity in Arizona. Next! I urge the president to behave. He's had mostly a good week. He's got an opportunity to do a lot of good things. You know, there's a bonus item in here that kind of came up overnight, and that is that General McMaster, the guy that is the new national security advisor, is allegedly ready to undo everything Steve Bannon did to the National Security Council before he came in. You remember, there was an executive order that put Bannon on the National Security Council where political advisors like David Axelrod for Obama never had been.
Right, and he gets privy to very classified information.
Yeah, he could sit in the back of the room as a counselor. You could see things that the people at the table would show you. It's like a bad click in high school, but a really important click. And Bannon was at the table, but the chiefs of staff for the Army, and there were people that had to be at the table, that were always at the table, no longer at the table. So McMaster's going to change it all up. He's basically going to take what Bannon did and undid it.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, and because mostly Trump admitted to people who didn't have to say this that he signed it without knowing what was in it. So the same way the Democrats did with Obamacare initially, right? All right, so that's a good thing. That's your extra element. But the point of this story is apparently the president has even angered Mary Poppins. Julie Andrews is upset about, amongst other things, the potential killing of public television.
Yeah.
So, and the arts, and the importance of the arts, which basically on the show we're always going to vote for. But that Mary Poppins story, I don't know, when she's really angry, does she fly around? She get a little witchy? She fly around? She come after you? I don't know. You don't want to make Mary Poppins angry.
I would never want to.
Or Maria Von Trapp either.
Mm-hmm.
See, now you're getting into the really angry area, aren't you?
Yes.
Careful.
Or the Princess Diary queen.
I think that'd be your third most recognized movie. Was that your most important one?
Uh-huh.
You love that movie?
No. Oh, it's a great movie.
Yeah, it's cute. Sweet.
Audrey, wasn't it? You liked it, didn't you, Princess
Wasn't
Diary?
It the actress who everybody hates?
Oh.
Anne Hathaway?
Anne Hathaway.
Yeah. Isn't she in that movie?
She's in that movie.
I liked her in that movie, though.
I haven't seen it. Next up is this. Baseball is eliminating the intentional walk. Let's go live to Dave now at home plate. How do we feel?
I'm fine with it, honestly. I don't have a problem with it.
I guess I don't either. I'm a traditionalist when it comes to baseball, but the fact is one out of, what, 10,000 times you see a pitcher throw a wild pitch in that circumstance?
Yeah, I mean, basically, you're killing a few seconds while he throws four pitches off the plate.
Right.
And they're trying to speed up the game. I don't know how much this really speeds up the game. It saves
30 seconds, 45 seconds.
Maybe,
so would you literally go to the umpire then and say, hey, we're going to walk him?
Get it from the bench.
It'll be a signal from the dugout.
Right. Okay.
Manager, but there's so many signals that come from the dugout. Is he going to have an indicator first that the umpire will have to know? Does he know if it's a fake signal?
That's a good point.
What if the umpire suddenly runs to first? You know, hey, I thought that was the signal.
That maybe we should have all the teams fly the W flag. That could be the symbol for walk.
That would confuse a Cubs homestand, though, wouldn't it?
Very much so.
Cubs are done with... Oh, next! Cubs are done with Sammy Sosa. Cubs management are upset. They say they don't want to hear about it anymore, and they don't want to answer any more questions about it. Sammy Sosa did an interview with a blogger a couple of days ago, or a podcaster, I guess, who used to work for the Cubs, who I didn't know.
Yeah, Chuck is a real sharp guy, and he was there when working in the public relations staff when Sammy was with the Cubs, so he knew him very well. Sammy made some comments which apparently didn't go over real well, and
I saw the comments. I didn't see anything outrageous in there. Did you?
Not.
He kind of compared himself to Christ.
Well, he made.
Yeah, but I don't know that that's a Cubs problem. That's more of a Sammy and God problem.
I don't know that there was anything. If you've read Sammy's comments over the years or
nothing surprising.
Nothing really surprising about it, but I think this has been something that's sort of been simmering there. Would the Cubs at some point embrace him, welcome him back as their all-time home run leader?
Look, it's going to happen. Mark Grace will be back. Sammy will be back. It's not going to be this year. It's probably not going to be next year.
Yeah, I agree.
But at some point, they're going to be back.
It will happen at some point.
And then there's this. We got to try and get to this. You guys remind me later in the show. Steven Tyler from Aerosmith wrote an amazing letter to a fan who I believe is 20 years old, and she's not going to make it. She's dying of cancer in the hospital, and she's a diehard fan. And the short the letter for now is this. He wrote her a letter saying how sorry he was and how much he appreciated all the support, and gave her a list of 150 bands that are better than Aerosmith that she should really try to listen to while she's here.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I like Steven Tyler.
That's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. It's a really, it's a sweet letter. So we'll see if we can get to that. And the nice thing from Steven Tyler is you open that letter and you look at a picture of Steven Tyler and you pretend it's your grandmother. On a dark desert highway. This is for Nick. Cool. Nick and I used to go to a lot of Eagles concerts together. I don't know anybody who couldn't like the Eagles. It's like the movie Heat. Good morning, buddy. How are you?
Yeah, I gotta go.
Remember how you used to get on my shoulders for the encore and you'd sway?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. That's when you drugged me.
All right, you have 10 seconds. Why do you hate the Eagles?
Because they're the Eagles.
All right, you've got 8 seconds still on the count if you want to use it later for something else you don't like. All right, anything...
the Eagles, man.
I know you're going to do your Oscar prediction, so I don't want to blow that up.
But
any movie this weekend we ought to see?
Oh, hang on a second. Now, there's a movie coming out. I haven't seen it yet, and I'm so unbelievably excited. It is the writing and directorial debut of Jordan Peele, who is half of the genius of Key and
Peele. Oh, yeah. I thought you were being sarcastic. No, he's great.
It's not a comedy. It is a horror film, a flat-out horror film, and it's called Get Out. It's about an interracial couple, an African-American man and a white woman, and it's their trip to the countryside so that the guy can meet his girlfriend's parents, who don't know he's black. And when he shows up, some very weird Stepford Wives things start to happen. The trailer for this thing looks amazing. I've been, seeing interviews with Jordan Peele talking about it. He's a hardcore horror fanatic. And
wow, you're really in love now.
No, I can't even tell you how excited I am about this movie. And this is one of the few movies that if you go to Rotten Tomatoes right now and look at all the critics' reviews, it's 100%.
Yeah, you never see that.
Dead. Yep.
If you and Matthew McConaughey and Jordan Peele were in a boat and the boat was about to capsize and you could only save one of them, who would you say?
Those two guys.
Oh, so you jump.
Yeah, exactly. The world doesn't need me, Steve. Those two.
I didn't see that coming. No, I need you. When are you doing your Oscar predictions? Tonight on the show?
I will do it Friday morning, yes, tonight, after 3 a.m. Jeff Tuckman is going to join us at 2, and at 3 a.m. I will do my full predictions in every category.
Give me one. Give me best.
I can give you a few if you want.
I don't want you to give up too many. Give me a couple of them.
All right. Let me start with – let me give you the lock of the night.
Okay, do that.
There are some – like, here's the deal.
Just Denzel. It's got to be Denzel.
I don't know.
Oh. Okay.
It's between Denzel and Casey Affleck. Denzel's got one already. He's got two already. And sometimes the Academy is very stingy in there. And Casey Affleck gave an extraordinary performance in Manchester by the Sea. He won the Golden Globe. He's won many of the awards.
Well, Audrey is voting for Casey Affleck.
Yeah, I think he's got the lock. I think he's in.
I'm actually picking him too, but I would not be at all surprised if Denzel won, but I think Casey Affleck's got it. But the one lock of the night, if you are going to just go, okay, bet everything, the house, Viola Davis will win supporting actress. There's not even a discussion about that.
Really?
She will win.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, she's great in it. If you're voting, like in terms of how many awards are going to go to what movie is going to win the most awards, La La Land is going to win the most awards. I have La La Land winning 7. Nominated for 14, I have it winning 7, including Best Picture. I've got it for Best Picture, I've got it for Best Director, and I've got it for Best Actress.
Nick, what's going to be the biggest surprise of the night?
that black people will win. Like black people will be allowed to win Oscars. It's new.
Not that part.
The biggest surprise of the night will be if La La Land doesn't win Best Picture. That will be the biggest surprise of the night because you know it is at this point it's got the most nominations tied with Titanic and All About Eve.
So how about that?
Yeah, it's amazing, and so that'll be a surprise. The performances of the songs are everybody is performing their own songs except for La La Land, where they're just going to have John Legend do the songs instead of Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone singing City of Stars. But John Legend is going to be there. But the rumor is that Emma Stone is going to come out and sing with him.
That'd be cool. So
I hope so. That'd
be cool.
I love
that'd
when
cool.
she sang it.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah. And yeah. I hope and I believe Jimmy Kimmel will be great, and I hope he is.
I think Jimmy Kimmel's going to be terrific. I mean, I really.
I think
there's
one of those deals where he could be good enough where he may be back for 3 or 4 years in a row.
I would hope so. The other lock of the night is a documentary feature, if you're voting. If O.J. Made in America does not win documentary feature, I'm flying to L.A. and taking the Oscar away from whoever wins it.
I agree. I was completely obsessed with that. And the People versus O.J. Simpson.
Well, the Made in America one, the Made in America one is news.
Yeah, I know. That's why I like it.
The other side is John Travolta making funny faces.
I know. But I'm with Nick. I loved it.
O.J. Made in America is one of the greatest documentaries ever made. And, yeah. I know that sounds like hyperbole, but it is a massively important piece of work about the history of this country, about race relations, about...
That's really well done.
It's an amazing piece of work.
Yeah, it is.
Totally agree. If you get stuck, we had the director on a couple times, and if you get stuck in an elevator with the director, don't expect titillating conversation, but he's really good at his job. Reservoir Dogs, Tuesday, March 7th, Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. The next screening by Nick. How do we get tickets?
It's Fandango.com. Fandango.com. And tickets are going pretty good on this one. 25th anniversary of Reservoir Dogs on the big screen. If you've never seen it on the big screen, it's pretty great. So it's Tuesday, March 7th. Only $10 to get in. Parking is free. Fandango.com.
And it's the only thing he's more excited about than another Eagles concert. Big story next, 720 WGN.
People go, they use the bathroom that they feel is appropriate. There has been so little trouble.
So if Caitlyn Jenner were to walk into Trump Tower and want to use the bathroom, you would be fine with her using any bathroom she chooses.
That is correct.
The issue of transgender bathrooms wasn't one we heard a lot about from the president during the campaign. He said at one point, Caitlyn Jenner could use whichever bathroom she wanted to at Trump Tower. So why is this now a priority for the administration 40 days into office?
It's not a priority. I think there's a case. Let me answer the question. It's not a priority. There is a case pending in the Supreme Court in which we have to decide whether or not to continue to issue guidance to the court.
Be clear, Secretary DeVos is on board with this?
Yes, 100%.
Sure. So much to get to in so little time. Our friend Chuck Todd from MTP Daily and Nate the Press. Good morning, Chuck. How are you?
Morning. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing fine. Did I get you in the middle of something?
No.
Oh.
Not at all.
No, nothing happening. Listen, what's more awkward? If you're Rex Tillerson and the Homeland Security the Secretary Kelly and you're trying to bring fajitas into your meeting today to kind of break the ice, or your House Republican doing a town hall? What's more awkward?
Oh, I think doing the town hall is the toughest thing in politics right now, if you're a House Republican, because you're sitting there trying to assess, trying to figure out, boy, how intense is this? Is this real? Is this something I need to worry about? Is this overly organized? Am I going to overreact? I think the toughest thing to assess right now is being a House Republican and trying to figure out how to respond to this and trying to figure out, especially if you're in one of these districts that it's been overwhelmingly Republican, but Trump didn't do well in it. So it's a real conundrum. You're like, well, what is that about? Are these people just anti-Trump? Are they going to punish me? Are they not? So, look, I think that's the toughest place to be right now.
Is it the exact same thing you saw with the Democrats a few years ago?
It looks like it to me. You know, it looks like it to me. You can't, you know, even if it is, you know, I always love this thing. It's organized. Okay. You know, I could throw a party, spend a ton of money. But if nobody comes, the party wasn't a success.
Right.
You know, the point is, you know, if it's organized, that ought to scare them even more. You know, it means
exactly right.
They're throwing a party and people are showing up.
The thing that tells me that there are a lot of people angry there is just basic common sense, and that is when somebody stands up and asks a question, they're not shouted down. And if you are shouted down, you're likely to be an interloper pretending to be one of them.
No, that's true. And look, I think it's just a – this is also the voters, to me, screaming at the politicians going, look, we weren't crazy about the shakeup in health care. But we didn't like what we had before. And now we don't want you to take anything away. We want to make it – there's that farmer that was at Chuck Grassley that we keep quoting, you know. He said, just repair the thing. You know,
right.
Sort of like,
right.
I think he sort of says that. Yeah, the voters, you know, they want, they're sort of tired of this sort of whiplash government style. You know, oh, Democrats are in charge, this happens. If Republicans, I mean, just look at the transgender order, things like, I mean, it does feel this way that basically, you know, you have your rights to, you know, depending on who's in charge. That's a uncomfortable place to be, and voters, you know, the less polarized voters don't like it.
Chuck, on the topic of the transgender bathroom, maybe this is the cynical side of me, but Betsy DeVos initially opposed the draft of the Trump administration's plan for withdrawing the guidance. Then this morning issuing a statement saying we have a responsibility to protect every student in America. Again, like I said, the cynical side of me saying, is there someone in the administration saying, all right, you know what, get out in front of this and maybe this will be kind of a little bit of a feather in your cap to kind of ease all the opposition that she's received?
Oh, that's interesting. Maybe. Although I do think, you know, there is Donald Trump, I think, doesn't care about this issue as much as others in this administration do. I think, and so this to me felt like a bone to throw to Jeff Sessions a little bit. Look, Sean Spicer has a point. There is a Supreme Court case. You know, I don't think the government has to, you know, finding out whether this would fall under Title IX is important long term. But, you know, there was always an argument that the Obama administration maybe was overstepping here, that this is a decision that is up to the states and school districts. So that is, I think, trying to sort that out is still worth finding out. And I think the court will speak. But this felt like more of throwing a bone to Sessions and the social conservative press.
I have a family friend whose son is an officer in one of the service branches that shall not be named at this point, who is being moved to Seoul in an urgent manner in the next couple of weeks. And that's essentially all the details I have. But it leads to the conclusion that the North Korea concerns are bigger than ever. You have the same read?
Yes. Let's look at a couple things. Obviously, you have this definition that's very brazen of the half-brother of Kim Jong-un. If he's unhinged enough to do something this brazen, you can't help but conclude he'll do, you know, who knows what he would do, he's so brazen. Throw in the fact that South Korea has its own political turmoil right now. You know, they impeached a president.
Right.
They have sort of a, you know, they're in the middle of trying to figure out their new leader. So South Korea, somewhat vulnerable, feels there's a perception that it's somewhat vulnerable now. So I tell you this, I had Ambassador Chris Hill, who's a former ambassador to Korea, on yesterday, and he was almost screaming, like, where's the sense of urgency on this? We kind of have a madman in charge of North Korea who clearly will do, you know, crazy plots to kill people, and he may have nuclear weapons. This is a problem. This is no longer sort of a comedy. You know, we've all treated, I think we all fall into this category too much. You know, the South Park boys did that movie Team America about 10 years ago.
Right.
Making fun of Kim Jong-un's father. And it was funny. And I think we've had this perception that sort of, that all the North Koreans are just kind of the kooky nuke people. Well, kooky nuke people have nukes, still have nukes.
That'd be a good T-shirt. Kooky nukes people have nukes too.
Yeah, I mean, let's not... You know, I think sometimes the people in power don't take North Korea's threat seriously.
Yeah, and I think you brought this up on your show, Chuck, which I completely agree with. If it's true the guy killed his uncle and may have had his half-brother assassinated, and he has nukes, why wouldn't a crazy guy like that use the nukes at some point?
That's what Chris Hill is essentially saying. Like, yes, we have an issue, and it's sort of like, let's stop treating it as the fifth issue on the U.S.-China list of problems.
Right.
I think the crazy man who will kill people, assassinate family members, maybe it should rise to number one on the priority list since he's got nukes.
And once again,
if a killer's half brother, what won't he do to South Korea?
And once again, thanks to China for showing all the leadership and forthcoming nature of Mike Madigan in stepping up to do the right thing. So
connect geo-global problems with the Rauner-Madigan feud.
It's my Spirograph. You can play with it later. Chuck Todd, MTP Daily and Meet the Press. As always, thank you, sir.
Thank you, brother. Good talking to you.
That's Chuck Todd, and Chuck made a point this week. It was like, ding, 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 Johnny. Had his uncle assassinated, may have fed him to, was it wild dogs?
Wild dogs, or wild animals, yeah.
And watched, and allegedly now could be behind the assassination of his half-brother. I don't want that guy with nukes.
Did you hear what the one girl that they're questioning said? She had no idea. She said she thought it was a joke for a game show.
Yeah, well, the kind of defense.
Well, I was going to say, what kind of game shows do they have in North Korea?
Not a funny one, I'll tell you that. Kill your half-brother. We're back after this.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Great play by Steve Larmer to fend off a checker and then clear it to center. Here comes Roenick. One man to beat. Roenick in on Gdynia. A spinorama. He's around him. He's in. He scores! Jeremy Roenick! A great move as he turned the Soviet defenseman inside out.
Jeremy Roenick taking a page out of Dennis Savard's book. Terrific balance after being knocked down. Great spinorama move and bang into the net.
Yeah, in the midst of the Hawks' great run on the road, it always is great to hear one of the best to ever put the sweater on. Well, you know, I go a little further in this. I'll say Jeremy Roenick, one of the best to ever wear skates. And I'm including Dorothy Hamill in that.
Well, you should.
Yeah. So I hope you appreciate it, Jeremy. That's big praise.
That was funny. I didn't expect that. That was a very, very good introduction. I appreciate that.
Well, we're excited about the Hawks. We are every year, but man, you start running off 7 on the road in February. That's pretty good.
It's more than pretty good. The Hawks have never done that ever, to have 7 road wins straight. I mean, that's pretty amazing, knowing how long the Hawks have been around. So, and you know, and I've done a lot of radio and interviews over the last couple of days, and you know, I'm putting those Hawks right up there as one of the favorites to come out of the West, just because of their ability to win on the road and how good these young kids are playing right now.
Jarrett, who's the team? Is it Minnesota they have to worry about the most?
Well, they're the team right now that's on top of the West, and they've shown the most consistency, which I think is pretty impressive the way that they've rolled through the season so far. They are very, very good from top to bottom, and their goaltender is really good. If Dubnyk gets really hot, it could pose trouble for a lot of teams, not just the Hawks. But listen, there's a little doubt in Minnesota right now because the Hawks just went into Minnesota, beat them the last 2 games there. So it's the best thing that could happen to Chicago right now. One more meeting with them in March, and that's going to be a big one in terms of the mental game between the Hawks and Minnesota.
You got Kraft Hockeyville coming up. This is a cool deal, and the people at Kraft, I salute them for getting behind it. What's your part in this, and what do you want to say about it?
Yeah, thanks for letting me come on and tell you about Kraft. You know, this is the 3rd year for Kraft Hockeyville. They're going out to the grassroots, going out to the small communities and trying to find the most passionate hockey community in America. So the first year was Johnstown, Pennsylvania. We had an amazing time in Johnstown. Last year was Marquette, Michigan. So the winner will get the opportunity to host an NHL preseason game right there in their hometown in their local arena. And Kraft will give $150,000 to upgrade that arena, because we know there's so many arenas across the country that need some repairs and some upgrades, and Hockeyville is making sure that they really take care of the hockey communities. And this is one of the best things that I do all year, because, you know, to celebrate hockey and to put hockey first and foremost in the public eye keeps
USA Hockey growing. So you have up until March 10th to write me a letter, craft a letter about your arena or something in your community, why your community is the most passionate in the country, and submit that letter to crafthockeyville.com, or you can go Facebook and Twitter using the hashtag HockeyvilleUSA. Very important before March 10th, enter your community, and hey, maybe you might be the third annual Kraft Hockeyville winner, and we'll see you in September or early October for a preseason game.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's very cool that you're lending your time to it as well, and it's great to hear you say after everything you've done in hockey how much this means to you. I know you got to run, bud. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, thank you very much. Go Hawks.
There you go. Jeremy Roenick and NHL Network doing a fine job.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's really good. I think when he was playing for the Blackhawks, everybody kind of knew he would be.
Right.
In that. And he got to suit up recently for one more shift.
Yeah, I didn't hear. How did he feel afterwards? Because Troy is more than willing to admit that he gets stiff when he goes out and plays the alumni game. Yeah. Did that one more shift take a lot out of him?
I think he was okay.
One more spinner on the ice?
I think he was all right.
I say he looked really good.
Of course you think that. It's time now for this, and when we come back, we'll do that. That'll be the news. And then we'll get into the politics thing next hour with Hollywood's hottest couple, Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein, on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, I don't go anywhere without the camera.
Local news, the Skycam. Skycam, are you on the air? Local base, the Chuck Gowdy.
You might roll the open. Take three, Floyd.
Good evening, Chicago.
Why don't you just give it up and come clean?
Why don't you have some coffee?
Is this your new Eckhart here? This gentleman?
Excuse me, I don't appreciate that.
Well, then why don't you get out of our way?
Is it a normal pre-game kind of thing for you?
Come on, am I in Atlantic City every night?
Are you?
I'm near Atlantic City.
Well, I don't know.
If you don't know, ask.
Well, I'm asking you. Do you do it frequently?
No.
Chuck Gowdy is in the newsroom with the latest on that story. Chuck?
I've had the pleasure of knowing Chuck for a long time, and I don't know, Chuck, that I've ever asked you this in all your years of taking care of people in this town and doing the hardest-hitting reporting in the city. If it's not a friend or a family, do you ever get a phone call where people are put a phone call out there where people pick up? I'm just thinking there's a lot of caller ID going on in your world.
Well, that's why we show up at people's doors and generally knock instead of ringing the bell.
And I think you know how I feel about Mr. Madigan. The fact that you were willing to chase him down was always one of my favorite moments. Anyway, enough of kissing your butt. Welcome to the program.
Well,
nice
continue.
Nice to have you back. The concern that I have about the food supply in this country is going to get a little bit of an eye-opening extra layer tonight, I guess, with what you guys found on the I-Team.
Well, it's not a new story, but it certainly is one that needs repeating from time to time because new things are added to the list every day. Food that is basically fake, adulterated, spiked, mislabeled, mainly because organized crime has its teeth into this industry and wants to make a few extra bucks by cheapening the things that are in your cabinet and that we eat in restaurants.
So how does this play it out without selling out the piece that we want people to watch on ABC7 and the 47 newscasts they have now between 4 p.m. and when you go to bed? The mob makes money how?
Well, the mob makes money essentially by controlling the fake food industry and the way that fake foods and tainted foods, counterfeit foods, things that are cut for profit, make it from places overseas mostly to, you know, the food supply chain in the United States. It's no different than any other kind of product that the mafia, the Japanese Yakuza, have managed to make a buck off of over the years. I mean, they sink their teeth into the manufacturer, the supply line, and then the end sale.
So they're not concerned necessarily about the mercury-tainted whatever coming from China, not that that's part of the story necessarily. They're just concerned about getting their payment from the food supplier, and then what does the supplier get for their money?
You know, it's things like spices, seafood, beef, sugar, olive oil, different kinds of vegetable products that come into the United States imported, things that have to look good in order to be purchased, and the way that they look good is, you know, potentially some kind of a cheap chemical painted on them that allows them to be sold for a much higher profit. And all along the way, you have, you know, organized crime hands in this that the authorities believe are making hundreds of millions of dollars. It may be 10% of the food supply in this country that has some kind of adulterated, spiked product, chemical, added to it along the way to cheapen the whole thing.
Chuck, what's maybe one or two of the foods that surprised you the most? And, you know, when we go shopping, I think everything's tamper-proof. How can we kind of protect ourselves and take that extra step to make sure that the foods that we buy are not tainted?
Right. Well, it's not so much that it's been tampered with to harm people, although some of the chemicals and some of the things especially that are put into commercial spices along the way are. I mean, they can hurt you. They're chemicals that can end up over the long term if you consume lots of them hurting you. But the thing, I guess the one product that surprised me were certain kinds of cheeses, especially Parmesan cheese. I mean, you think of it as pure and it's in a lot of things that, especially in Chicago, that people enjoy eating. It's one product that the authorities have had a very tough time controlling over the years. Possibly because of the region that it comes from, because the Italian mafia has been heavy into this industry of fake adulterated foods for profit. So that was one thing that surprised me. I mean, there are a whole series of questions that you can ask yourself in the grocery store, in addition to in restaurants, about things that are built certain ways to see if you're being taken advantage of, from seafood to meat. And some of those things we'll get into when we do this story tonight at 10 o'clock.
Last question, Chuck. Do you get what you pay for? In other words, if you're willing to pay a little more, is it better, or is that overthinking it?
No, it certainly is at the top of the list of things that you can do, Steve. If you're willing to pay either a higher price or what seems to be a fair price, the likelihood is that you're not going to fall into this line of counterfeit fake things. It basically is like all other products. If the price is too low, it's probably for a reason.
Chuck Gowdy, ABC 7. Story goes up when?
It'll be on the 10 o'clock news tonight, and then, of course, as you say, it'll be available on all the other various platforms nearly immediately afterwards.
And it's also Chuck's ringtone, so he can remember what he did the day before. Thank you, buddy.
All right, take care. Good to talk to you.
You too, Chuck. I almost said Chuck Todd, Chuck Gowdy. We're chuckled today.
We are chuckled.
Chuck Gowdy from ABC 7.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
723, we continue. Hi, I'm Steve, your radio friend. Show number 847 at Cochran Show on Twitter, facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. Texters always welcome, including you knuckleheads that claim to hate the show and the five of you text every day at 312-981-7200. Good news for you is one of you will win. Texter that hates the show most but keeps texting Stevie. That'll be the Stevie Awards handed out next week. And welcome to Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady. You know, they have a mining that I do that is this show. You know, there's days I'm not out of here until 10:15. Yet you two, in the business of politics, campaigns, the other things you do, have both been on a lot of vacations recently.
Well, it's a good way not to have to talk about what's going on in this country.
Most people take vacations because they want to get away from work, but you take vacations to not have to do your job?
Exactly.
Is that what you're doing?
Basically,
okay. Okay,
yes.
Okay. And you're just back from another little getaway?
I am.
Yeah? Nice tan? That is real, isn't it?
It's weird from a guy, but thank you. Tanned, rested, and ready.
I don't know. Your whole countenance here is sort of I have no comment on this.
I know. He's weird. He's hiding something.
Walls up, man.
He's hiding something.
All right. So here's the big question. To my memory, the most divided state this country's been in. And I include the 60s when you and I were little kids, Pat, and Eric was a gleam in his mother and father's eye.
I mean, you're older than I am, but yeah, I do.
Yeah, those 2 weeks do make a difference. people don't claim to like each other anymore, and they can't seem to get along. How do we get here?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, but if for me, it started with the Clinton derangement syndrome in the 90s, where it really got vocal.
But I think, wouldn't Newt be a part of that?
Yeah, everybody. Yeah, Newt was a part of it. But to me, one of the things that we need to solve this, not jumping ahead, is we have such gerrymandered districts now. We need redistricting reform. So the districts themselves are not so Democrat or Republican. So we actually have contested races, and you can't just run to the right or run to the left and hold your seat. And that's why I think that contributes to a lot of the end result. But I think it started for me with Clinton.
Eric, same starting point?
Yeah. I take it back. Maybe even 88 with Lee Atwater and that campaign, kind of when they really got nasty. It got really nasty.
I mean, if you want to start talking about, if you want to go more global and say, when did we start questioning institutions and not believing and talking about fake news and people lying to us? You got to go to Watergate in Vietnam, and you got to say this was the moment when things changed. But I think there's something more fundamental going on. I'm no economist, but you read all this stuff and you talk about how globalization and technology have really created more equality around the world, but it's created more inequality in Western countries, including the United States. And so now we're in this incredibly tumultuous time where you have a shift, you know, some people would say the largest shift from labor to a knowledge economy. It's incredible disruption. People are scared. And that's a great recipe, sort of you put all that in the cauldron, and it's a recipe for someone to just give simple solutions, scare people, divide people, because everyone's unsure of what the future holds.
I think you can add to that if you want to talk economic insecurity from maybe the Republican or the conservative side. If you go back to the 60s, you could argue, at least in the inner cities, this is a product of a lot of failed liberal big government policies that lead to a lot of the problems, I think, in the cities. So it could be the insecurities on the macroeconomic front, but I think there's also some failed policies from the 60s that contribute to some of that.
You're talking about government itself or organizations like Rainbow Push and places like that didn't get it done?
It's the government. The bad ideas of putting housing projects and dumping a bunch of money and things, not real solutions.
Right. And
great society kind of stuff.
And then tearing projects down and moving people out and thinking that's okay.
Yeah, and you just a permanent underclass because they're no incentive or no way to rise out of the underclass.
Which it's not hard to tie that to the running gang violence that we have today as well.
I know we're trying to solve all the problems by 8 o'clock, and this kind of goes to
we'll
the question.
We'll be done by 7:30.
By 7:29, right? But this goes to the question of frustration that Steve brought up, whether it's Madigan or Trump. I think voters in general are frustrated, and there's so many changes that can be enacted, redistricting, term limits, even the Electoral College. But do you guys think that many of the voters feel frustrated that it takes so long? I mean, the process, it takes so long for reform.
But this is a good question. This is a good question. We have access now we didn't have before. Yeah. Did it always take this long,
yes,
or does it take longer now?
It was built for inertia. The founders, the genius of the founders in the 18th century was to have these checks and balances, to say you couldn't have one party or one person come in and create enormous change because that's disruptive. And that's what they saw in sort of the instability in monarchies, changes of kings, and all this kind of stuff. So the system really
hindsight, thank God.
Yeah, the system
yeah.
Well,
to do that
yeah.
in
right.
today's
system,
environment.
The system was built for inertia. So the notion of fundamental, huge, overthrowing change has always been there. Now, we are at an exceptional moment when, you know, the partisanship combined with the machine grinding to a halt has created a level of frustration. And then add in, Steve, as you say, social media and the 24-hour news cycle, and we're all paying attention
to
it.
Well, that's why, along those lines, that separation of powers, it's so important that when Trump makes statements against the judiciary, which is one of the branches, as president, that's so dangerous.
That's right.
You can say that for the media, too, not one of the branches, but when he texts the judiciary,
it's like trying to knock out a support beam of your house and wondering why the wall fell down.
Exactly. But to try to eradicate one of those checks is not good for the democracy.
So the question becomes, I mean, I think we can all point to lots and lots of factors. Where do we go? Is the experiment doomed? Should we still be optimistic? You know, I, Steve, I don't know the answer, clearly. I'd make a lot more money if I did.
No, you have plenty.
But here's what I do think. Maybe it is like the person that has to hit rock bottom before you can begin
the alcoholic thing
to come back up.
I'm not going to get cured unless I accept that I need a cure.
And I would say, and I'm not just talking about the left, but I think the energy in this moment today, yes, it's exacerbated the partisanship. But maybe we took a lot for granted, both on the left and the right, that, it's always going to work. We'll switch off in terms of who is in control. But everyone makes money. Everything's okay for the elites. Who cares? But maybe when there's this point of disruption, when we see that democracy's fragile, that maybe our state of the world
when you see what you might
continue,
lose,
when you see what you might lose, maybe it empowers people.
Yeah, and I would also wonder too if my concern about a lack of honor and a lack about caring for each other, and all the things that we old folks say we grew up with that don't exist anymore, is that true or is that a media and social media propelled myth to some extent too? Because when I look at these town halls, I see people concerned about their neighbors. I see people fired up. I see people who want the right thing, as opposed to all of us in the talking head community and those who are supposed to make the rules kind of going in a different direction. So, you know me, Mr. Optimist. Just ask Mike Madigan. 7:30, back with a big story and then more, because we've only got a half an hour now to solve this. The clock's ticking on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Bing, bing. I love it. I love it. I'm sitting there tweeting. Bing, bing, bing. You press a button. Bing, bing. They all hand you checks. Bing, 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 bing. We had our beautiful Marine standing there. Bing, 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 bing. You know, in the old days, bing, bong. You know, with a map. Bing, bing, bing. Little mouth on him. Bing, bing, bing. Bing, 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 bing. Bing, bing, bing. They're cleaning up. Fix it up. Bing, bing, bing. A 14-point plan. Bing, bing, bing. Anthony Weiner. You know, the little bing, bing, bing. Everyone's attacked me has gone. Bing. Everyone else. Bing. Where have they gone? Bing. Wow. What a tackle. Bing. Like a rocket ship, except in the wrong direction.
I'm sure Zachary Taylor probably said a lot of really goofy things, but we didn't record all of those. That is fantastic and frightening all at the same time. 741, Eric Edelstein, you work, don't you? Don't you have a job?
I do.
Where's your job?
My job is at AL Media.
I hear good things. You know, you're the official AL Media of the program.
I heard. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a big move. How about you, Pat Brady?
Next Generation Strategies.
How odd. Next Generation Strategies is our official Next Generation Strategy.
That's right.
Cost me a lot of money.
Sure. All right, we talked briefly about the past. We're figuring out all of the problems of America by 8 o'clock. We talked about the past. Let's talk about the present. All we do now is scream at each other. He's an idiot. No, she's an idiot. He's wrong. No, she's wrong. Some of the most party-friendly leaders of the Senate are now in the latter stages of their life going, hey, Steve, that's all we got out. Alan Simpson comes to mind. Back in the day, Tip O'Neill wouldn't have put up with this. He would have been out. So what do you do if you've got a relatively gutless collection in Congress who won't stand up? A lot of them won't even show up at these town hall meetings. And how do you fix the divide? All right, take that one on, Pat.
I still think you need to go back to the way that we elect our House members and Senate people.
Is the answer then. Gerrymandered.
It's gerrymandered.
To make it fair.
But it makes it productive for you to be partisan and act that way, because that's how you get reelected. If you're in a district where you have to appeal more to the middle, you don't behave that way. Because the people that like that kind of behavior are the far right and the far left. They like the screaming and yelling. They like the fighting. But the people in the middle don't care for it.
Yeah, when you hear someone say he has to say that he's going to get primaried, explain what that means.
That somebody will run against you in the primary, you'll lose your seat.
Somebody who says that guy's too much in the middle, he doesn't care about our core values.
Keep dragging to the right, but if you have a district that's primarily to the right, you have to run that way. But if you get a district that's fairer, it's drawn so you get more representation from across the political spectrum, then you don't get that as much.
It does seem like the core solution, but Eric, I'd also say that we have a responsibility to go out and vote in the primaries if we're significantly angry, and not just every 4 years.
No, everyone has to participate and can't just sit at home and complain. You know, the other thing, which is not necessarily a cure-all, but it's something to be considered, is federal term limits for Congress, too. Now, you can argue you lose the experience and sort of the tenure of people, but...
You know, Madigan hasn't been there long enough, though, do you think?
I said federal.
Was it 50 or 60 years?
I would like to have the state term limits named after Madigan.
Right, but I'm talking even at the congressional level. You know, the argument against term limits, just to be fair to the debate, is that it gives staff more power, lobbyists more power, and you end up sometimes with a little bit more partisanship, actually, because mm-hmm. people say, "Well, I'm not going to be here very long, so what the heck? I'm going to do whatever I want." But I do think it goes back to that notion of, you know, citizen legislators. And if we can have term limits for the president of the United States,
that's the ultimate argument, isn't it? I mean, if we're going to term limit the president for obvious reasons. The Senate and the House, equal branch of government. Why wouldn't we term limit the Senate and the House?
There's another thing that needs to be done, which is, you know, you look, and I know you've looked at this, Steve, because you study this stuff, but the explosion in former lawmakers who become lobbyists.
Sure.
I mean, it's gone crazy over the last 10 or 15 years.
Well, that's one of the good things Trump did, is 5 years you can't be a lobbyist. It's not great if you go in and go, I want to be a lobbyist, but any sort of limitation on that is okay.
Right. So the notion of, you know, members of Congress who sacrifice a lot to do this job, no question about it, give up a lot of potential earning power, but a lot of them position themselves to then go make a lot of money as lobbyists afterwards. There's no question that's a huge drain on the system. Not that there shouldn't be lobbyists and people shouldn't be able to make a living, but to use elected office to then go cash in that way, I think is something that could be cracked down on further as well.
So term limits, how long would you go? Would you go five terms in Congress, that's 10 years, and two terms in the Senate is 12, or go 6 and 2? 12 and 12.
probably.
6 laps in Congress is pretty good.
I think it's too many. I think I would do.
I think it is too.
I'd do three or four terms in the House and 2 terms in the Senate and move on.
I agree.
Got to get the money out too, because the minute you get elected, you start raising money to get run in the House, you're immediately running again. And it's supposed to be that way because it's supposed to be a more representative body. But if you're spending the whole time raising money, you're not doing what you should be doing.
Realistically, when you're elected to the House, even as a rookie, how long before you start raising money for the next one? Is it immediate?
Immediate. If you're in a competitive district.
So you literally, you swear your oath to office. You go over, you go, where are the pens? I'll be back. I've got to go over and make some calls.
Well, did you hear the number once? It's like $10,000 a day you basically have to raise from the time you get in.
Here's what realistically happens is the other side, both sides do this. Immediately after the election, they say, here's who won by a small amount. Here's our targets for next time. We're going to go start recruiting.
They're already doing it, and the Democrats are already doing it in Illinois to their targets.
Right. Well, Senator Durbin said this, and there's a guy who you would think could go, look, I've been here a while. I'm not making any calls right now. And he talked about the responsibility that you have to make these hideous phone calls where you go and you either call the loop of people that are always paying, and then you call the secondary loop of people that you hope will pay, and then the last group, which you want to get involved.
Well, and Paul Simon said the same thing when he retired, which was even if your heart's in the right place and it's 10 o'clock at night and you have 10 phone calls to return, and the one person who's the big donor versus the constituent who's not, it's just human nature. And he didn't want to be part of that.
So how do you take the money out of it?
Well, you can't really, because it's targeted. It's free speech.
Well, the Supreme Court has basically said it's free speech.
It's
a huge moneymaker for the media now, for television stations.
But then what's the upside for, say, the community activist who was, you know, who actually did get out the pen and paper and hit the streets and go door to door to run,
right?
Yeah. If they have no
That's
money.
Exactly right.
But you can win, and Eric would know better than me, but I know at the state house level, you can win a state house seat with no money. You just walk the district, and you can. I've seen it happen.
Yeah, because if you, except for the crazy drawn districts, you can literally go to everybody, right?
Yeah, if you start early enough and go door, you can win. The number of people that are actually going to come out and vote.
And here's the other thing that's maybe a bit hopeful, too, is generationally, I mean, there is much less live television watching from people under the age of 40. And so what happens in 20 years is it's still commercial television that's driving the expensive campaigns. Now, you spend money on digital and you can do all that kind of stuff, but it ends up being more efficient and more cost effective. So maybe as people's consumer behavior changes, their democratic behavior changes too, and some of that cost comes out. But Pat's right. It comes down to the Supreme Court has said that money equates with speech, and so it's protected. And you really can't do a lot to crack down on that until the U.S. Constitution is interpreted in a different way.
That's why we're going to get the crystal ball out right now during the break.
Oh, good.
We're going to have both of them rub their crystal ball, and I think you know what I'm talking about. And then they're going to come back with predictions for the future. What's this going to look like in 4 years? What's it going to look like in 8 years? You know, as old as I am, I'm 2 weeks older than Pat. I don't know if he's mentioned that before.
You got a birthday coming up, too, don't you?
I do, don't I? Don't you?
Yeah, but
way after that. After
did you have one last year?
I have one every week.
We all are part of God's great big family. And the truth, you know, love is all we need.
Come on, Springfield.
We are the world.
Come on, Capitol Hill.
We are the children. We are the world.
Jake's good, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well done. 7:54, Eric Adelson, Pat Brady. On the Steve Cochran Show. All right, so we've done a really good job of setting this up, telling us where we are. Now, where are we going to go? You guys know the time-lapse photography here, what it could look like based on the speed of how things happen. Obviously, Trump is a little different, in case someone's noticed, so it's hard to predict him in a normal template or pattern. But what's this going to look like? Let's say he does all 4 years, and you know, you shouldn't be talking about a president, I suppose, in most cases. Like, let's say he does all 4 years, but that's certainly up for debate. What's it going to look like, Pat? What's it going to look like in 4 years?
You know, I was correct all along that Trump was going to win.
So. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So I'm out of the prediction game, but I do think I'm a Republican because I believe in conservative approach to government.
Right. And
Trump's not a conservative. And I think that there might be a big shift in the Republican Party where people are going to be fed up with a lot of spending, a lot of his nonsense, and they're just not going to support. The conservatives might walk away, and that's going to hurt the Republicans long term. But, unless he really, really does poorly, the chances are we'll keep the House and the Senate.
But once the 6 months lapses here, and it starts to be a concern about raising money, and if this town hall anger plays out in their districts, they have no reason to support Trump.
No, and it's just like 2009 with the Tea Party. I don't think these are fake protesters. I think they're real, and I hope our people, the Republicans, go to these meetings and listen and show up, which Democrats didn't do. I think it was a mistake in 2009. This, I think it's a real movement. People are really angry right now.
This is teed up for the Democrats, and yet I see a tremendous lack of leadership. Who's the leader?
Well, you know the scene where the beach ball's on the tee and the guy's got the baseball bat, and he just comes up and he takes a huge cut and just whiffs, completely whiffs.
That's the party right now?
It could be. Yeah. It could be. Well, yeah. Look, I have
a great analogy.
I have two predictions. One is, I think what's going to happen is, as Trump's favorability plummets and the
37% in the poll yesterday.
I think it'll dip below 30.
I do too.
And I think at that point when congressional Republicans now see him as a menace and a threat to their survival, that's when I think the stuff really gets kooky. I'm going to make a longer-term prediction, which is I know this is nuts, but maybe it's the only way I can get out of bed in the morning, is I think we're going to look back on this moment in American history and say, wow, we are resilient as a country. This looked really dark. You know, not just Trump, but the partisanship.
Yeah, 100 years from now. Not 5 years from now. 100 years from now, being able to look backwards and
say, like,
go,
you know what?
They saved it.
Yeah, and you know what? Yeah. This thing is resilient. And the thing that was created, and we've been through a lot, and this was a crisis, and a crisis moment in our politics, not just Trump. And I think we worked our way out of it somehow, some way. I have to believe that because I'm not ready to give up on the whole thing.
I'm not pessimistic at all. I'm very – I think the next couple generations – my kids' era, I think there are a lot of good, smart, compassionate, engaged people in that generation. I think unfortunately, our generation is the worst.
I think our generation as parents have not left this in very good shape for our kids, and in my case now our grandkids, and they deserve better.
Aren't you writing that book, The Worst Generation?
Yeah. Steve and I are on the cover. Yeah.
Smiling.
We contributed nothing. We didn't fight a war. We didn't do anything. We consumed.
Basically,
played a lot of golf.
It's the Louis C.K. All you do is consume resources.
Eric, we can write the foreword.
It's a picture of a weathered Tom Brokaw standing next to Pat and I in full tan.
Just shaking his head.
Right. On Pebble Beach in the wind shirts.
The best generation, the worst generation. It's a set.
We had a lot of fun, though, didn't we?
Yeah. No. And the good news for you, Eric Edelstein, is that we're out of time for me to bring up Mike Madigan.
You gonna work him into North Korea again?
I could work that out. Wow. Yeah,
I'll make a prediction on that too. If he does not relinquish power down there, the state will never recover because he just has too much power. He controls all the legislation.
Yeah, it's not made up.
It's not. That's not the way this system should work.
It seemed to work okay till Rauner became governor.
But, yeah, really? What's your definition of okay?
Okay, I'm out of here. Yeah.
Will our next Democrat, or rather our next governor, be a Democrat?
I believe it will, and I believe it'll be Chris Kennedy.
And Chris
now, I'm doing work for him, but I'm working for him because I believe in him, and I think he'd be a great governor.
I know he came in with Pete. You got to bring him in here with me sometime because I'd like to talk to him.
He'd be happy to.
You sure he doesn't want to just talk to Pete?
He wanted to talk to Andrea.
Oh, you brought him in.
Yeah, I brought him in.
Okay. So there's going
to
be some other Democrat multimillionaires getting in too, right?
Possibly. I mean, there's others that are talking about it, but at this point, Alderman Pouar is the only other announced candidate. Chris Kennedy is the other announced candidate. And there's some other names that are floating around.
Sherry Bustos says no. She said she was going to get in. It's probably too expensive this time, right?
Yeah, it's tough to run. Blagojevich pulled it off. It's tough to run from Congress to
it is.
Governorship,
and
particularly her district.
Her district is one the Democrats could lose if she's not the candidate.
And she's in leadership. I thought of all the ones that are talking that she would have been
the
most formidable.
Has Rauner declared he's going to run again?
He hasn't really said, but listen, his numbers are about where they were when he won. He's traveled around the state a lot, and a lot of people are fed up with the Madigan
Rauner
approach. And but the reality is, Chris,
you're asking for it, man.
Chris Kennedy and these guys, they all have to go to Mike Madigan to ask permission to run. And
that's not true. That's not
we were
true.
So nice for 56 minutes.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I'm going to fresh voice on the Oscars. You've heard us yapping about it. Dean's off with a cold. I think it's a cold, right?
Allegedly. Yeah, no, he has a cold.
What's better for the show, if we make up something that will frighten people into supporting us more?
Yeah, of course.
Dean has leprosy.
How about Dean went to France or something a little nicer?
Oh, no. No, that's not going to frighten people into listening.
Caught a cold.
I'm saying we pick a terrible disease that Dean would need your love and support for until he recovers from it.
Oh, I was just trying to find a way to get
rickets.
You to do
worst case of rickets I've ever seen in an entertainment report.
Gross. And you don't mean Tom.
Scurvy. Dean's got the scurvy.
I don't think people get the leprosy or the scurvy.
Got the scurvy. Matt Miller's on the phone. Matt is pop culture editor at On Milwaukee. And nice to have you on the show, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing great. I don't have scurvy, so I'm very excited about that.
All right, here's what I want to do. Before we get to the traffic report, I want to lay out the categories for the Oscars quickly, because most people know the big five or the big six, at least by category. But another category that you're watching that you think will be interesting other than those big ones, is there anything that jumps out, or is your focus on the main ones?
I think I'm very interested in best foreign language film of the categories, because I think that's where the night's going to get political, and I think that's kind of the big tense conversation everyone's having right now, is when are the Oscars going to get political, and I think that's where it's going to happen. The director of one of the nominees, The Salesman, is boycotting an Iranian director. He's boycotting the Oscars, and ever since he announced that, because of the travel ban, there has been, that movie's got a lot of steam going its way, somehow surpassing a three-hour-long German comedy that was somehow the frontrunner. I'm not kidding you. Three-hour-long German comedy is a real thing that came out in theaters last year.
Do we know if it was funny?
Every critic I talk to says that it's a very good movie. It's a terrific movie. They're even going to remake it for America with Kristen Wiig and Jack Nicholson. Jack Nicholson getting out of retirement
wow.
to make this movie. So this must be one heck of a three-hour-long German comedy.
And people don't want to re-elect Angela Merkel. She's making Germany funny again.
So that's the category I think it'll be interesting in.
The producer's just going through my head right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. And before we get to the traffic I mentioned, I'm feeling good about Kimmel. What about you?
I am as well. I think he's going to strike the right notes tonight, especially after seeing Fallon at the Golden Globes, who I did not like, and he's really struggling on his late-night show, too, getting surpassed by Colbert.
Yeah, he is right now, yeah.
I think he's having a hard time with this newly political climate, whereas someone like a Colbert or even a Kimmel who's more chummy with the stars but without being like, oh, gosh, look at all the cool stars around me that Fallon tends to be, right. I think Kimmel's going to hit the right note.
You're awesome. You're great. I would argue, though, I wonder who's not going to be political, because I think Kimmel will come out with a little
politics.
Well,
he has to. He's got to come out and do some slant.
I think you're right, though. I think Kimmel will be as close to Billy Crystal, who in my mind is one of the greatest Oscar hosts of all time. I think Kimmel will be very similar to Crystal.
Well, that's high praise.
Don't you think?
That's high praise.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think he's going to be very chummy, very, very polite.
Well, that's the balance, right? But you got to be able to knife the rich people in the room who are only there for themselves without them thinking that you were doing it just to them.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. He can jab a little bit without everyone being like, you're not allowed to do that.
Right. Do you know where you are? yeah, that would be funny if the whole thing turns into a Republican town hall. Just the stars start screaming in advance.
Madison takes the stage. Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
We're rewriting the entire night. All right, stand by. Matt, more with Matt in a second. We'll get his picks for the Oscars. I think you and I will save our full picks for tomorrow, right? But maybe
yes.
We'll sneak a couple in here.
That sounds good.
More with Matt in a second from On Milwaukee at 8:18.
And I can't deny the fact that you like me right now. You like me.
Yada, what was that, 82? It's been 35 years since Sally Field said, you like me? It's been a while.
Did she win that for Lilies of the Field or Norma Rae?
I'm pretty sure it was Porky's, too.
No, I think it was Norma Rae.
Yeah, that sounds right. Sounds right there, Vanderbilt. Matt Miller, pop culture editor on Milwaukee. It's on Milwaukee.com, isn't it?
I'm Milwaukee. We dropped the .com. It's cleaner, in the words of Justin Timberlake and The Social Network.
Look how cool you are. all right, let's start with the way they used to do it. I think the order changed that they actually go supporting male first. But let's start with supporting actress first. Who do you like?
Viola Davis. If you have money, put it on Viola Davis. If you put down anyone else on your ballot not named Viola Davis, you're wasting perfectly good pen and paper. Just Viola Davis wins here, no matter what. Call it a day.
And this is for the movie?
for the movie Senses, I should say. Yeah, she's got the biggest role. She should be in Best Actress, but they wanted to put her in Best Supporting Actress in the hopes of getting her an easier win, getting her out of the way of the Emma Stone versus Natalie Portman fight. She's definitely your winner there.
Yeah, there's a point in that movie which doesn't sell it out because, you know, it's been the clip they've run over and over again, where Viola Davis's character is screaming at Denzel Washington, "I've been standing right here beside you."
Right.
And there's a point where you look at it and you go, "Do you know that's Denzel Washington?
I know.
I don't think you should yell at him like that."
That scene, too, she's crying and the tears are just kind of falling off of her face into the wind.
She's good.
Man.
She's snotting as well. And I just imagine, like,
she was. I
didn't know that was a Hollywood term.
No, Matt,
she's snotting.
I thought the same thing.
I want to watch a movie about the family living next to that family. You know, just like every day, just being like, "Do you mind? I'm working over here."
Right.
Yeah, they needed some actual hidden fences. all right, best supporting male.
This one's interesting. I think this one's going to be Mahershala Ali. He's won most of the awards. This is from Moonlight. This is like a cast award, to be honest with you. The whole cast in Moonlight is terrific, and I think they're going to try to give Moonlight, which I don't think is going to win Best Picture, I think this is where they try to give Moonlight some credit, give Moonlight the stage, give it a chance to shine.
And for people trying to go, who is that? I didn't see the movie. He is a guy that's worked for a long time, mm-hmm. a tremendous actor, who I guess, wasn't his breakout House of Cards?
It was House of Cards. If you saw Hidden Figures, he's also in Hidden Figures.
Right, plays a boyfriend. Tremendous.
Yeah, yes, and I believe he was in Luke Cage as well as one of the villains on Netflix, Luke Cage. Great character actor. Definitely, he deserves to blow up. Anything he's got coming to him after this Oscar win is more than deserved. He's a terrific actor.
He gave the speech on Muslim Americans at the SAG Awards,
yeah, right?
Very, very powerful acceptance
Absolutely.
Speech. Yeah.
And the Oscars love seeing that. They love it when you take the stage and you say something profound. When they give you the stage at the Oscars, they want you to give them a moment. And that's part of the reason why Casey Affleck's energy has died down for Best Actor, because the speeches have been really awkward this entire campaign season. And they're like, if we're going to give you Best Actor, we want you to come on stage and give us a moment people will talk about, not mumble for 5 minutes and then tell Denzel Washington you think he's cool.
Yeah, because in his defense, Ben never let him talk, you know, when they were little. So that was hard.
I think Casey Affleck might just be an awkward dude, too.
Oh, like, he is awkward, yeah.
All of his movies, he plays awkward dudes. That's just what he does.
We have our man buns done at the same place whenever he's in town. So, I mean, I know if you're watching, it looks like a bald spot. It's actually a man bun. I just chose that color. I'm being told a bald spot is the entire top of my head.
Man bun's better than his beard. I'll give him that.
Yeah, his beard is
Agreed.
Weird. It looks like you could find a lost puppy in there.
Boy.
Yeah, it's not a great look.
All right, best actress.
Best actress. This one, it was supposed to be Emma Stone versus Natalie Portman. Natalie Portman's Jackie fell off, so this is Emma Stone's race to lose. She's proud that she's almost guaranteed to lock to win this. Also, on an unrelated note, Emma Stone, did you know that she was on a Partridge Family reality TV show when she was a young actress? It's one of the greatest clips you'll ever find on the internet.
Is it the Bonaducci show?
It's like this weird singing reality show where she's called Emily Stone, and she's supposed to sing, and she's really... It is incredible. Everyone should look it up. In Search of Partridge Family, Emily Stone or Emma Stone. Look up either. You'll find it. It'll make your day, and it's just a delight.
She's
hard. Welcome, America.
Her real name is Emily, right? Because Andrew Garfield referred to her as something, saying that they're still very good friends, and called her Emily, and of course the internet blew up. Emily Stone.
She's hard not to like.
She's cool.
Yeah, she really is.
Yeah, she's delightful, and they're going to love her speech, and she... This is another one where, on some level, they love anointing starlets, and she's definitely, this is going to boost her again.
In Search of the Partridge Family, there's your tip of the day. Best actor?
I would normally say Affleck, but I think Denzel Washington wins this one. It's a more of an Oscar performance. It's bigger, it's louder, and the fact that he directed the film itself, too, definitely I think that gives him a little extra cred. Casey Affleck's great in Manchester by the Sea, but it's a really quiet performance. And like I said, he hasn't sold himself great on the campaign trail, so I'll give it to Denzel.
I love Denzel. You can do no wrong. My sister doesn't like Denzel.
No.
Yeah, we had talked the other day about this. She doesn't like Denzel. So.
And for all the double work you do for him?
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why she doesn't.
Oh, that could be why.
Could be a personal thing. As a matter of fact, Matt, you don't know this, but I was Denzel's butt. I was his stunt butt double throughout the 90s.
Really?
Yeah, it's a long
story. Impressive work. I thought you did great.
Well, I appreciate that. More of a left cheek roll, a couple of those. Best director.
Best director. This one is also interesting. I think it's going to go to Damien Chazelle for La La Land. I think it's the most directed movie, all those one takes and stuff, and big, beautiful vistas, and the idea of doing a musical. People really love that. I think the best direction of the year is Barry Jenkins in Moonlight. That's who I wish would win, but I think they're going to give it to Chazelle, who directed the terrific movie Whiplash from about 2 years ago. If you haven't seen Whiplash, definitely check out Whiplash. It is a marvelous, just bomb of a movie. Yeah. Just a burning fuse of a film. Terrific.
And is La La Land a lock for Best Picture?
Absolutely. You don't get 14 nominations and not win Best Picture. They like it. They really like it.
By the way, Sally Field won for both of those movies that we were talking about earlier, Matt.
Well, they really, really liked
they
it.
They really did. She went for Norma Rae and Places in the Heart. I said Lilies of the Field, but it was Places in the Heart and Norma Rae.
I thought it was for the Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2. That's what I thought.
Oh,
mesmerizing performances.
Oh, Emily. Matt, nicely done, man. Thank you. Matt Miller is the pop culture editor at On Milwaukee, and we're back with a big story and Coach Q coming up on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Seabrook reaching in, pokes it away to the right boards to Panic, clears it over the line to center ice. 2 seconds, one. Joel Quenneville picks up his 400th win behind the Blackhawks bench as a head coach as the Blackhawks come to Minnesota and extend their road winning streak to 7 games. With a 5-3 victory over the Minnesota Wild.
The Who for Coach Q. The Coach Q Show sponsored by Hooters, the original wing joint. And Mr. 400 joins us now. What a great night in Minnesota. And congratulations on 400 wins. That is a heck of an accomplishment.
Well, thank you. I feel very fortunate to have the opportunity to coach. It's a great group of guys, and we've had a lot of fun here, and it's gone by quickly. But that was a special night for Taser and his line. I think Nick Schmaltz had an amazing game. Panic Pans as well. They were... Boy, they all 5 goals are in on plus 5 as a line. It was one of those nights that I'll never forget. And, you know, and nice to see, the kid step up and have one of those games that, like, wowed you. And he had the puck on a string all night, and Johnny was spectacular. So it was great to see, and it was a big win for us. Kept us in the Minnesota pursuit.
Coyotes tonight, before we get to that, having lived up there for 5 years in the Twin Cities and knowing what a heartbreak it was when the North Stars left town, these are some really rabid, wild fans. And they went from having that look like, we got them right where we want them when the puck dropped, to the end, and going, what the hell happened? Because it was impressive. It really was. It was one of the best performances I've seen the Hawks make. Obviously, statistically, it backs it up. But from the bench, man, you must have just sat back and said, how much fun is this?
This was a great game. It was a good pace of the game right off the bat. Crow got tested early in the game, and then the second period, I thought we got going much better, and then they came at us, and you say in the building. The building was loud. That was like, sounded like deep in the playoff run. The intensity and the noise in the building when they pushed at the end with a couple chances. They had the crossbar with a goal down, and so it was the game was on the line from start to finish, but we did a lot of good things in that game, and like we said a minute ago, that Johnny's line was probably the big difference.
Joel, you've been on a nice run, especially this month, and 7 straight road wins,
first
unprecedented, for the Blackhawks. Have you seen kind of a process? Have you been building towards a game like that on Tuesday?
Well, it was a great trip. Our road record there. I mean, we've definitely improved our team game over the last, month and a half. I think we have the puck a lot more. There's more balance to our team. We have more speed in our game. We're making the other team defend zone possession, and we're dangerous on all our lines. So it's been good progression. You know, it's tough to win in this league on the road and to do it the way we've done in some tough buildings twice in Minnesota. It's a says a lot, but you know, I don't think we should be satisfied. We got to get, you know, consistency is what we're looking for, and we want to keep getting better. I still think there's another level here as well, but certainly good. You know, our game's as good as it's been at any point all year.
Is this the fun part of the season, or do you not break it down that way?
Well, I find it, you know, I think it's always fun. You know, the games are, you know, every game's so meaningful now. You got everybody looking to battle for positioning. They're battling for points, the meaning of playoff positioning and standings and matchups. And, you know, you got the trading deadline at this time of the year, too. So there's a lot of things going on right now. And, you know, I think in our thing, we want to keep that pursuit on Minnesota and keep some pressure on them and try to stay ahead of the Minnesotas and Nashvilles. And so, you know, there's always something going on. There's always something to play for. But I think you're starting to see the intensity of the games ratcheting up here. And everybody's got a busy month of March going into the last week of April. So it's our first week of April. So it's a... it'll be fun to see, but there's a lot of important games going along for everybody, and they're, you know, the value of those 2 points is huge.
What about them Coyotes tonight? What do you think of them?
They're playing their best hockey of the year. They're playing good hockey, and you know, they always seem to play us well in our building, and so let's be excited about it, knowing that you know, we've got some games here at home. We want to make sure that we take advantage of the home cooking here, and but continue to play the same way and find that consistency in our game.
Andre, you had a question.
Well, Coach, I'm wondering if you're an Oscar guy. We're talking a lot about the Oscars coming up to Sunday. I know you have bigger things on your mind, but do you watch the Oscars or DVR them? And are you worried at all that soup in a sandwich now with all the Oscar buzz that it's getting, there might be a little bit of lack of focus on behalf of Campbell and Breadman?
Well, we got a big game Sunday night, so I'm, you know, I probably won't watch or DVR. You know, you hear a lot about it, though. We'll you know, but hopefully those guys get some recognition for that.
I hope so. I mean, for all they've done for the industry. And the good news is Campbell and Panarin are going to be wearing the special limited edition Blackhawks tuxedos during Sunday night's game.
Who wore it best?
We'll yeah, exactly. Out. 400 wins. That you said it went fast, but, you know, it's such a cliched question. But you look back and you go, was there a chunk of those 400 where you felt like this is the place that I really want to be? This is where it goes. I mean, it feels like as great as you were in those other stops, you've never been better than you've been here.
Well, this is definitely a great place, and we've had a ton of success, and, you know, winning championships is, you know, obviously the highlights, and but we've had some great runs almost every single year, and but it's a tough league to find that consistency, and it says a lot about the players and the core group that's been here from day one, and organizationally as well, the importance of trying to be consistent and putting in and after winning and losing half rosters and assembling a team to be competitive the way we've been. You know, Stan gets a lot of credit, and our core guys, you know, these guys continue to find ways to make themselves better and people around them better. So it's a privilege to coach these guys, but it has gone by quickly, and it's a you know, it's Chicago's a special place to work and to play, and great sports town, and it's amazing the response we get from their fans and the following we get, not just here in Chicago, but you know, you talk about our last road games, and it seems like every city we go into, it's amazing how many Blackhawk fans are there. And we're well represented in Minnesota, which is a tough building to get a ticket to. So it's good to see, and it's a fun place to be.
Do you know when you're coming up, you've hit so many of these milestones, it seems, in the past couple of years. Do you know when they're coming up? Do people tell you, hey, this could be number 400, or do you kind of have an idea in the back of your mind when that's coming?
No, somebody will remind me. I think I was reminded going into that the day before when we had going into the game. But that's you know, it's all about in the coaching business. You're in a short term business. You're only thinking about the next opponent, and the next game, and trying to win that game, and doing everything we can to max out. And I think organizationally, there's a longer way of looking at things. But coaching, we're just thinking about trying to win the next game and then be the best we can be.
I never asked you this, I don't think, anyway, on the air. Who was your favorite coach to play for?
I played for a bunch of coaches. Right.
Was there one that stood out?
I put a lot of them out of business. Roger Neilson was always, I started with him and I got to work with him. Don Cherry, Jack Evans was a guy that, former Blackhawk, that there seems to be a number of us as players that are all over the coaching fraternity or in the hockey business still. And, you bump into our guys, seems like on a daily basis, no matter what opponent we have, there's always a former Whaler out there that played with Jack and our group. So it's a, Jack was very quiet and, but he was, a good coach and a good guy to be around.
None of them ever yelled at you, did they?
Not very often. I didn't have too many yellers as coaches.
Sometimes that's worse, right? I mean, I've talked about this.
Like, I think everybody's got to be their own guy, and everybody has their own way of getting their point across. And I don't know if I'd be a yeller. I think I'm more of a sometimes a yell.
Yeah, if I took the independent survey of the guys on the club, I could get back to you, but I don't know that helps either one of us. Hey, before you go, one texter question: last movie you saw in a theater?
I think I saw the McDonald's movie there.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Well, there you go. It was just a couple weeks ago. I haven't seen it yet. Yeah, the franchise.
Yeah, there you go.
What's your franchise? You thought it was a hockey movie.
Yeah, there you go.
That's how they got you to go. all the best. I'll be out there Sunday night with you, and have fun tonight against the Coyotes.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
And bless you, whoever sneezed in the background there.
Sorry, I couldn't get it way quick enough. I just wanted to hear Q. I couldn't leave fast enough. I thought it was quiet.
I just sneezed, too, at the same time.
Was that you?
No, my mic wasn't done. That was so bizarre.
Oh, you all sneezed at the same time?
Yeah.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a break. Well, first you have to do the traffic, and then we'll come back. We want you to spot the purple. I'll tell you about that. And we're going to thank some folks for the punch key drop-off today, amongst other things. We'll catch up in a moment at 720 WGN. All right, here's the deal. It's not punch key day. I always thought was the day before Fat Tuesday.
It is, it's supposed to be Fat Tuesday
Fat Tuesday because then there's Ash Wednesday.
And then, Lent, and you're supposed to fast then for 40 days.
But it's now a six-day event.
It's become big.
Yes.
Punchki Day has become a big deal.
So we have this lovely woman who helps clean the studios named Sophia.
Sophia, we love her.
And Polish native, and she brought in punchkis.
How about that? And she's been talking about this, too, remember? Because you brought up Punchki Day, and she said, oh, Steve, I'm gonna bring in the best punchkis.
Yeah, she couldn't be nicer. And
so sweet.
She does great work, but she also makes I think the technical term here, and I don't want to drop a lot of Polish on you, but she makes a bitch and poochie.
Yeah.
Bennett from the opening bell ate 9 of them. He's currently laying on the floor, rolling around, asking for help.
He wanted to have a punchki eating contest.
Yeah, he goes, who wants to have a punchki eating contest with me? I go, no one. What's the matter with you?
Yeah, well, he's so tall, he can eat a ton of them.
No kidding. You know what he looks like now? He looks like a snake after it eats. You know, a snake because he's tall and skinny and a little belly on him?
In his little belly. It's true.
Did you get a punchki, Steve?
You know, I did not. I had a donut. I'm trying to be good, man. And
we're going to bring you a Sophia Punchki. Not to test you, but because you need to have one.
What flavor are Sophia's Punchki?
All of them. All the flavors.
There's jelly and chocolate, and there's whipped cream, too.
She made one with kale for Dave.
Yeah, it was very nice. I love Sophia.
Had a little wheel on
top of it. Are there any
spinach ones? Spinach?
I'm just kidding. That would be good,
spinach Punchki?
That's disgusting.
Well, if you can do a kale one, why not?
But the kale was just grabbing the stuff from the median on Michigan Avenue again.
And the grass.
It in
I think that would take all the taste out of it.
Yeah, ruined experience.
Yeah. Oh, Grzanich, I thought you'd be all over the punchkis
trying
today.
To be good.
Okay, well, we're going to try to ruin that for you. Not because we want to. We just don't want you to miss out on the Sophia specialty here. And the Central Continental Bakery, they're celebrating Punchki Fest for a six-day run here. Prepare yourself for their annual Punchki Fest today through Tuesday. The Central Continental Bakery. Good folks doing nice stuff there, too, in Mount Prospect, Central Continental Bakery, continentalbakery.com.
And they're the ones who make the key lime punchki, too, which are delicious.
Oh, my God. I can't hold it.
Steve is rocking back and forth now, and he hasn't had one yet. All right, last night on Fallon was pointing out all of these gutless congressmen ducking out of their town hall meetings. Instead of taking this time back and over this town hall tradition that started up a few years ago to have these meetings and have an exchange with the constituents. Well, these constituents have been tough on them. And a lot of them, if you're watching any C-SPAN, like, I am, a lot of them. And Jimmy Fallon pointed this out last night on his show. Well, they're trying to get out of it.
Coming up on C-SPAN, at 12 p.m., Senator Mitch McConnell zips himself into a duffel bag and asks his assistant to carry him out to the parking lot. At 1 p.m., Senator Ted Cruz shrieks, "Farewell, nitwits," throws a smoke bomb, then when the smoke clears, is still visible, frantically trying to open a window. At 2 p.m., House Speaker Paul Ryan says, "I have to take this call," then starts talking into a stapler. And finally, at 3 p.m., Senator Rand Paul shouts, "Is that Nick from The Bachelor?" Then tries to run through the wall like the Kool-Aid Man.
Now I get it.
That's from Fallon last night and our friends at C-SPAN as well. And we're back with your news next. And CLTV joins us as well. Spot the purple in the 9 o'clock hour. Spot the purple in the studio while you watch CLTV. And be the seventh caller when you hear the cat roar. Don't call until you hear the cat roar, but if you can tell us where the purple is at that point, you will win the prizes. Could be Dave. He could be the cat.
What, did you tell Dave you gave out his wallet yesterday as a prize?
Yeah, that is one of them. Yeah.
I was wondering where it went.
Well, listen, I just thought you were a giver. Back with the news next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
9:13. We continue on the CLTV hour. A little earth, wind, and fire. And happy to welcome in studio. Do you know Dr. Slick? Had you met Dr. Slick before?
Not until today, but what a cool name.
Dr. Slick could be a renowned member of the medical community. Or an NBA baller. Am I right about that? Couldn't
yes.
Dr. Slick be that? Yeah. Dr. Slick joins us in studio. We're going to spend a couple minutes here talking about the Chicago Lighthouse, which is an amazing. Well, it's not a project. It's an ongoing thing for how many years now, Doctor?
111 years.
I mean, it seems like it's going to stick. Mm-hmm. 111 years seems like a good run. And Milan Jerkin, plant manager and vocational training manager as well. Milan, welcome to you.
Thank you for having us.
And you are legally blind?
Yes, I am.
From birth or along
the way? From birth, actually.
You graduate with honors from Loyola.
Yes.
You get a BA and a teaching certificate.
That is correct.
And there was no steady work.
Yes, it was difficult. I graduated in 87, and this was a time of teacher shortages.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking that my credentials were good, I thought they would just love to snatch me up. And my job search lasted for 6 years without much success. It would be sporadic, of course, because you would go on these stints of I can do it and apply yourself the best that you can.
Well, everything you've done in your life, you had to overcome the obvious obstacle of not being a sighted person. And here you go. You got nothing but credentials.
Right.
Had to bum you out. I mean, that's tough. That's a tough road.
That's it. And then it bums you out. And then after a while, you might see a positive TV report about some blind judge. And you say, look at that. Maybe I can do that as
right.
well. So
right.
you know, it puts
right.
you back into hunt. So
now, the story I heard was your sister told you about Lighthouse?
Well, actually, it was my sister-in-law.
Sister-in-law.
Her name is Mimi, and I mention her by name because she was very instrumental in helping me get to where I'm at. Because she would urge me and encourage me to come to the Lighthouse, but not only encourage me and urge me, but she drove me in 1993. She drove me to meet with our placement counselor. And I spoke with them, and based on our conversation, I received a call about 2 weeks after meeting, my initial meeting,
mm-hmm.
telling me that based on my credentials, they had a position open for a vocational training instructor. And I took that position. It was the best decision I ever made.
Because, frankly, there's teaching involved in that.
Absolutely, because it gave me that ability to utilize my teaching skills as well as work with a population that I'm comfortable with
sure.
and work for their advancement and mine as well.
So, Dr. Slick, I think most people know this, but explain what you do at Lighthouse, the factory itself.
Oh, the factory, the plant where Milan works, we manufacture over 200,000 wall clocks each year. Many people don't know that. It's crazy, right?
Oh, my gosh. And my uncle used to collect clocks, which I always thought was super cool, like the cuckoo clocks. And then the ones that stand with the on the bottom, you know how it just kind of makes the turn.
Yeah.
Those are so unique. Rotating.
My grandmother had a house full of clocks. And it's one of those things in 2017. Everybody looks at their clock. Everybody looks on the wall. We are not in an era where you depend only on your phone for the time. That's complete nonsense. And you go, well, it's right here in town. Right here in town, making clocks not just for the Midwest or the country, but for the government as well. Is that right?
The government. Our clocks are all over the world. In fact, one of our clocks from the Pentagon that was affected by the plane hitting the Pentagon at 9/11 is in the 9/11 Museum in New York. And it stopped at 9:37. So proud of that clock.
How'd you get involved in this business?
It's a relic. I was a professor at the University of Illinois for 19 years, University of Illinois at Chicago, and the departments of ophthalmology and visual science, psychology, and bioengineering. And so I took those skills and applied them to the Lighthouse. I came to the Lighthouse in 2008, and it's been an amazing move for me, an amazing adventure.
Yeah, and I'm sure very inspiring, along with and being around folks like Milan all the time, right?
Incredibly humbling, inspirational. The Lighthouse is a happy place. It's a place of hope. We now employ close to 1,000 people. Many people don't know that either.
And people don't know, too.
1,000 people?
I know. How about
yes.
That?
We have a booming, in addition to our clock industry, a booming customer service industry. So we provide the customer service for the Illinois Tollway. So when you're going to renew your credit card for your transponder.
We call you guys.
Or pay a violation, you're speaking to a Chicago Lighthouse agent.
Well, no kidding. Well, you guys aren't going to mess around, right? You're going to go, look, Andrea, pay it up.
It comes back, right? It's probably true. I have probably talked to you. The employment and training wing at the Lighthouse is incredible too, right? Because people can go learn different job skills and then find employment.
Exactly. We place a lot of people both within the Lighthouse and externally, and we prepare them for the job. We help them with resume preparation, mock job interviewing, what Milan had gone through. And what we find is that many people with disabilities, visual disabilities, the average unemployment rate nationwide is 70% unemployment.
That is unbelievable.
So they get a first interview, but often don't get a second interview.
So what, then the people that do the first interview, they feel like, well, we did the right thing. We sat down with someone who was blind. So now we can go ahead and hire somebody that isn't. Is that how
That's exactly the case, unfortunately, Steve.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't end with the first interview. And Milan has proven how talented he is. I'm guessing, though, Milan, you're a tough boss. Are you a tough boss?
I would think not.
Do I need to talk to the people that work for you?
I try to lead by example. I try to lead by example and... I don't think if you're ruling by toughness, that's not the way to hold people's attention for a long time. By example and making everybody aware and taking ownership that what we're all about, that it's sink or swim, and we swim together or we sink together. And based on threats, that doesn't work for very long.
Let me ask you the stupidly obvious question that would be on everyone's mind who hasn't seen the way you guys do this on television pieces with our friend Annabelle Aval and others who have covered this. How do a number of blind employees with their heart in the right place make great clocks?
Well, the first thing is the way it's done. And I would first of all like to invite you for a tour.
I'd love to see it
firsthand because it's kind of hard to describe. But basically, there's various parts to this job. There's three assemblers who begin the process. Mm-hmm. And the way it's done is through training and having the right fixtures. We have an amazing gentleman with us. Dr. Slick knows Mike Wallace of 47 years, who's been employed with us. He's just a genius at producing these fixtures where it doesn't allow you to do it wrong, so that when you lay a body into the fixture and when you have the arm that comes over, which places the hands at the 12th position, and so basically it is something that is learned, and through fixtures, assistive technologies, and other ways, we can produce a quality product that meets and exceeds even U.S. government standards. Because we sell our clocks to the military as well, all the military
branches. Yeah, they need to know what time it is.
Yes, they need to. I just don't know. Late.
And you have, this is a perfect time, too, to mention the opportunities for veterans as well, whether they're coming back from their assignment or whatnot, too. Great program.
We're very proud of our veteran program funded by the McCormick Foundation. 10% of our employees are veterans, and those numbers are growing.
For people who have interest in general, I want to mention the event on March 2nd here in just a second, but for people who have interest in general and coming to see the facility and helping out any way they can, or maybe they've got a friend or a loved one and want to get a hold of you for all that, what's the best way to do that?
You can go to our website, thechicagolighthouse.org.
Okay.
or you can call our 312-666-1331 number.
Okay, give that phone number out one more time.
312-666-1331.
Well, I salute both of you. I salute all your people, thousands plus. And we got to go over. We should go over.
Absolutely, we should do that.
Just don't, Milan, don't let me near any clock making. I will screw that up like nobody's business.
And just point me to the shop where I can buy the clock.
Yeah, there you go. Because I'm good for that.
Shopper. We do have an on-site store, so yes, we can do that.
Ah, oh, nice.
My favorite word, Steve.
On-site store. On-site store, online store, your two favorite things.
It's true.
That's correct.
Thursday, March 2nd. Raising the stakes for Vision Poker and Casino Night. Where and when?
Gibson's. And the doors open 5:30. Cards fly at 7.
And Milan, you a card shark?
Sorry, sir?
Were you a card shark? You a card player?
Not so much. No.
Well, somehow I don't see the sighted issue having a problem with the... If I figured like everything else in life, you'd figure that out.
I think so.
Yeah, don't doubt it for a minute. By the way, you want to say hi to anybody? I mean, it's, you know, it's your big break in show business here. Anybody you want to say hi to other than the folks you've already mentioned?
Well, as I said, I want to mention my sister, Amimi, my wife, Mirjana, and my colleagues at work. And thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting us.
Well, thanks for coming in. Thanks for making the effort to be here. ChicagoLighthouse.org. Again, the big event is at Gibson's. Gibson's and Hugo's, I guess, right?
Right.
Yeah, on both sides. 1024 North Rush Street. You know, for all things Lighthouse, go to ChicagoLighthouse.org and find out how you can help or step up or be there. Nice to see you, Dr. Slick.
Thank you so much.
By the way, it's a real name, Dr. Slick.
I love that name.
Imagine if she decided to get into a different specialty.
I could
What's my doctor's name? Dr. Slick?
Imagine if she married you, she'd be Slick Cochran.
Yeah, well, it'd be like when I was in the NBA.
Yeah, right.
Hey, Milan, thank you. It's an honor to meet you, my friend.
Thank you, Steve.
923. We're back after this on 720 WGN.
Radio. 720 WGN.
Uh-huh. The Steve Cochran Show presents Hawk
Chicago
Opedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
I believe the word was a fracas.
Fracas.
And Hawkopedia brought to you by the official deodorizer of your Chicago Blackhawks,
Freshway.
Fresh Wave. If it smells funky like you're a monkey on a drunky, put a little Fresh Wave on it.
That's not really their slogan, but...
It's not bad, though, really.
Not bad.
What are you teaching us today, Professor?
About the bye week, Steve. This year, for the first time, the NHL said hello to the bye week. And while the teams like to get the break during the 82-game grind, they don't like the slap in the face when they resume after a week off. So far, 20 teams, including the Blackhawks, have completed their bye weeks. Only four of them have won in their first game back. 16 have lost in regulation, including the Hawks, who came back from their week off with a 3-1 loss to Edmonton. And the Hawks were one of 10 teams to score one goal or less in their first game back. They were one of five teams coming back on Saturday, and all five lost. Not only are teams struggling coming back from the bye, but coaches are concerned about the long-term impact on players because of the break. Teams are playing more back-to-back games. Generally, more games in a compressed time period. For instance, as we pointed out a couple of weeks ago, the Blackhawks will play 17 games over the final 31 days of the season. One suggestion is that perhaps the bye weeks not be staggered quite as much. The Islanders, first team to complete their bye week, came back from theirs January 6th. The last team, the Anaheim Ducks, will finish theirs on March 3rd. Nine teams are on their bye right now. One idea is have teams which are just back from the bye play other teams coming off the bye. In fact, the NHL has indicated that next year they're going to try to limit the byes to 2 weeks and possibly divide the league in half so that half the league would play each other coming back from the bye. You wouldn't have teams that have been playing teams that have been off for a week.
That's probably a better answer.
I would think so.
More fair.
One suggestion, have one conference take its bye at the same time, then have those teams play each other coming back.
Isn't that how the NFL tries to do it? They do it by division, the bye weeks?
They mix it up some,
no,
too.
They do, okay.
Still uncertain, of course, is what next season's schedule will look like, since the NHL has not yet decided whether to send its players to the Olympics. But there is a bright spot for the Blackhawks in all this. Sunday, they host the St. Louis Blues.
Right.
You're going to be there.
Yep.
That will be the first game for the Blues following their bye week.
Ah, payback.
There you go. And that's our Hawkopedia for today.
Thank you, sir. All right, coming up, somebody I think it's important for you to meet with a great message for women in particular. Stand by for that. Also, there's Paul Manafort news. Who is he? The Elvis impersonator that managed the Trump campaign, was the blackmail and is the blackmail around the White House, all centered around his time with Donald Trump.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
Dave is the sports maven you are. You remember the legendary softball coach Dick Sandberg.
I mean, yes,
famous,
of course.
Famous
very
around the world.
Hall of Famer.
He coached a young Mary Sandberg and our next guest in softball. Let's see if this surprises anybody on this show. Sandberg's job in part was to make sure the dugout was really clean.
And nope. Organized.
Nope, not a surprise.
For those of you enraptured with Sandberg spying on her neighbors about their laundry rooms and their laundry room equipment, if you send us a picture of your laundry room, I'm sure she'd appreciate it, and I would find it highly amusing. Listeners' laundry rooms.
Or we might make her head explode. I don't think she'd want to see my washer dryer.
Well, that's fine. That she could mock all the others because they're not as good as hers.
True.
Listener laundry rooms. What website can I give out for that? Or just post them to Twitter? Where do you want those photographs? This is another one of these things that Jake and Sandberg love because I just throw it out with no plan whatsoever. Where would the photos go?
Why don't you send them to Mary, to M. Sandberg at WGN Radio. That is Sandberg with E-R-G, not you.
Are you, okay. You trying to kill her, man?
And then her social security is 347.
Yeah, we'll give the rest of that out later.
226.
M. Sandberg at WGNRadio.com. In studio, Kelly Kitley. The book is called Myself, an autobiography of survival. And this is a tough thing to do, to get out there and write about your life in such painfully honest detail. But for somebody who at 38 years old, beautiful, by the way, and 38, mom of four.
Four.
Mm-hmm. Mom of four. The stories in this book, you've lived twice a life at 38. Mm-hmm. And you look fabulous. I hope you feel fabulous between the ears and in your heart, because this book probably helped in the process, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So your goal now is to do what?
My goal is to inspire as many people as possible to be the best version of themselves.
And to reach out to women in particular, right? Because women are not good at taking care of themselves in that regard.
No, and we had some nice conversation about that.
Yeah, we had in-studio therapy. Yeah.
I all needed right. it. Oh, did I just out myself?
So let's back this up. This is not about me, but we have a similar story in some regards. I grew up around a family and friends of professional alcoholics. Good time weekend folks. Really didn't know they were doing any harm. Didn't necessarily mean any harm, but harm was caused.
Mm-hmm.
This manifested itself in your life in a different way. You guys grew up above a bar?
We did.
Okay, when you're that close to the hooch, things can happen, correct?
Well, that's so normalized. Yeah.
Yeah, this is my family. These are my family's friends.
Absolutely.
And you started drinking at what age?
Oh, I had my first drink at 12,
okay,
which resulted in a blackout.
But when did it become the obvious problem? Because sure, it's a problem when you black out at 12, but when did you start sneaking it, or maybe you got it otherwise?
No, you know, and that's part of my story, is that people looked at me and said, there's no way you're an alcoholic.
Right.
I mean, you drink the way I do. You do stupid things after you've had too many drinks. Haven't we all blacked out? But I hated myself.
Right.
And to wake up in the morning to four kids and not be able to function the best to my ability, I felt like I didn't have a choice. It was something I always struggled with. 40 days of Lent, I'd give it up. During marathon training, I'd give it up. And think that I could go back. And I have a pretty addictive personality, and I do things pretty extremely.
Well, and the truth is, you can't go back. You know, I've had this discussion with people all the time, and it's, believe me, I'm no better than anybody else. I come from the codependent side, and I've seen all the damage it can cause. You're going to get cured or you're not. You're going to die or you're not. Because when you hit bottom, that's the path you have to choose. So what was the bottom for you?
My girlfriend from the age of 13 got sober 2 months before I did, and I saw her life change, and had been drinking pretty consistently every day after work just to manage the daily bedtime routine and homework and bath, and had woken up one morning, and we had gone to a CrossFit class, and I was throwing up mid-burpee. And
nice. Yeah, feeling good.
Feeling my best.
Yeah.
And we walked outside and it was pouring rain. And she had been telling me about her experience without
alcohol, and I wanted what she had. So there wasn't an ultimate rock bottom for me. There were many rock bottoms, but when I finally decided to stop drinking, it was just a very spiritual experience for me.
And my experience with people I love, of the great pain came from watching them hate themselves a little more every time they failed at getting the cure.
Hated myself. Absolutely.
So, and there were so many other extenuating circumstances in your life. You're sexually abused as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And then as an adult woman, you were sexually abused again.
I was sexually assaulted on right? Southport. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Eating disorder, which kind of goes along with your story as well.
Mm-hmm.
God bless you, man. Standing upright and going through this and paying it forward. It's mm-hmm. pretty amazing stuff.
Thanks so much.
Probably wasn't hard to come up with the title of the book. What else would you call it? Myself.
Do you find people, I mean, immediately I kind of started talking to you just about saying no on different levels, but do you find people coming up to you and asking for advice, but they have to want to make the change? They have to want to take that next step, right?
Oh, definitely. And there are people who have reached out to me because I have been very open, and that's something that's different for a psychotherapist, because we tend to be pretty private and our clients don't know much about us. And many of mine don't, but they soon will.
Right.
And so a lot of times, you know, it's planting seeds. And then somebody I had a conversation with 4 years ago came back to me and said, okay, now I'm ready. See. And it's just a beautiful experience to see somebody really wanting to change.
You know, what's funny is because we found this to be true, and that's why I love Gilda's House so much. Everybody means well. I mean, people that truly love you, they mean well.
Mm-hmm.
But people that mean well don't know the walk you've walked. And you got to have cancer to know what it's like to have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And Gilda's Club has all those people that do that. I think you got to know what it's like to be an alcoholic or a drug addict to talk to alcoholics and drug addicts.
Mm.
And I don't mean for anybody listening to not tell the people in your life you love them, but you got to help them get to that place. And at any point, if you can find your best friend,
mm-hmm.
your sober friend that mm-hmm. inspires them, that's going to cut through a lot of the BS that they hear as white noise, which doesn't turn into a cure. You can't love anybody hard enough to get them to stop, right?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I mean, addiction runs rampant in my family. I'm the oldest of five, and I'm a living example. My mom is sober. My dad is still active, and my brother has been sober, and we tried to help him for years, and it wasn't until he hit a pretty hard rock bottom that he did.
Stand by 1 second. I want to get you guys in here as well. But before we take the break, you're married?
I am.
When did you find Mr. Wonderful?
At the bar that my parents own, that I grew up above.
Was he an abuser as well?
No.
Drinker?
No. He's a good guy.
He's got to be a pretty special guy,
He knew what he was getting into when
he married me. Yeah, well, she's hot, but she's crazy. 9:51.
Pretty much.
Back with more in a moment on 720 WGN.
Blue Thunder.
Absolute buzz. Kidding me? As the day goes on, watch it's Paul Manafort's story. Paul Manafort, the Elvis impersonator who was running the Trump campaign. Big story in Politico about blackmail and Paul Manafort. So expect that to be news today. The guest in studio is Kitley Kelly. And Sandberg made a great point off the air. I wanted to make it
Kelly,
on the air.
Kitley.
That's exactly what I said, wasn't it? Kitley Kelly?
KK. 2K.
I was giving it the legal name where you go last name, first comma. Kelly is here, and you made a good point off the air about something that she lived through that is sometimes an excuse, I suppose, for folks, right?
Yeah, when she was saying how she decided to get sober, it was on the way home from a CrossFit class. And I know so many women who may not have a chemical dependency issue, but like you said, you stayed sick because you thought you had everything in control because you were training for triathlons and marathons.
Can't be anything wrong with me.
Right.
Look at me.
Healthy.
I'm an athlete.
I get up at 5 a.m. I'm running 10 miles a day and I'm doing these classes. You know, I must have it all together. But really, it's kind of like hiding. I think it's a way of.
And what do you do about that, too, right? Because you don't go,
well,
don't
sure
exercise.
Let's ask the psychotherapy person in the studio.
Did you realize that that was another thing you were using as a reason to stay in the bottle?
Not at the time. Everything is right. Taking a couple steps back and looking after the fact.
Sure.
But I was very high functioning. You know, I have a graduate degree. I run my own business. If somebody looks at me and says, gosh, she has it all.
Four kids that haven't joined a gang, you know, a husband.
Right. And how about the excuses, too? I mean, do you hear or did you hear or did you even use a lot of the, well, I just drink socially, or it's just when I go out, or it's just on the weekends. It's always, there's a, It's just when.
There's always a disclaimer.
Yeah, disclaimer.
Always. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I've had people say to me, you're not like those old guys who stand outside in front of those meetings and smoke cigarettes. And because that's what everybody thinks somebody with an addiction looks like. But I have found people with addiction come in all different shapes, sizes, ages, ethnicities.
Yeah, go to a meeting. Yeah, stop judging. Go to a meeting.
Thank you.
Talk about postpartum for a second, because if there's anything that is the most horrifically painful thing for women to go through, in my opinion, mm-hmm. it's postpartum depression, which is a chemical imbalance caused by any number of things. It's not your fault. Mm-hmm. And but you dealt with this, too.
Yeah, add it to the list.
Good Lord, woman.
A true survivor. And, you know, I do have a lot of personal experience, and that's what I want people to take from hearing my story, is that a lot of the things I've gone through have been so shameful. And there's this desire to hide and hoping nobody will find out. And it wasn't until I started telling on myself that I actually started healing and connecting with other women. And postpartum anxiety and panic for me was just an inability to sleep with that when I was feeling exhausted and constantly having racing thoughts. And the misconception is you want to kill your baby. Okay, that's extreme, and that does happen to some women, but it also can be having a baby is supposed to be the best time of your life. Well, it's also the hardest. And so normalizing that for some people and not feeling like you're not a bad mom if you struggle with some mood or anxiety disorder.
You got to reach out for help.
Absolutely.
The website is probably the best place to keep up with Kelly Kitley, KelleyKitley.com. The book is available everywhere?
Amazon, my website, you can pre-order it, and Barnes & Noble will be coming out in the next couple weeks.
Myself! That's it, and do get it. I'm really glad you were here. I think it's such a great message, because I know right now, and listen, I know this show makes women cry a lot, but I know a segment like this can make women, you know, be very emotional about the spot they're in, or men very emotional about the spot the women they love are in, because this is specifically a discussion from a female perspective, but this is for everybody.
Yeah. Everybody.
Everybody.
Yeah.
And not be afraid to talk about it, which is great.
Right. Mm-hmm. Moms, dads, kids, your brother, your sister, you, whoever has a problem and has turned their life over to booze or drugs, doesn't have to be that way.
Mm-hmm. And we all know somebody.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. It's like, you know, everybody goes, we all know somebody with cancer. We all know somebody dealing with this.
Yeah.
So I want people to know that you love your husband, you love your kids, and you're out there trying to help others. And this is a sunshine story at the end. This is not some depressing book that you're going to put down 10 pages in. Mm-hmm. But it's grippingly honest, and I hope people go out and get it.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Yeah,
it's
nice
been
to
an
meet
honor.
You. Nice you to too. Meet you. Minute before 10, we'll come back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.